This is 86 with Brian and Gore, where we take the Academy Award nominated films from any given year, beginning with the year 1986, and we try and give you, well, better options. This year, we're looking at the Oscar nominated films of 1988, recognizing the movies of 1987. We're gonna run through the movies that were nominated for the Best Picture Award. We're gonna discuss some movies, some personal favorites of ours, and then we're gonna give you a list of movies that we think are worth your time. Brian, do you have a list handy of the movies that were nominated for the year?
I always do.
Okay. So we live when your friends are dead.
...1988 Oscar nominees, as you said previously, celebrating the films of 1987. This year, the five nominees are Moonstruck by Norman Jewison, Hope and Glory by John Borman, Fatal Attraction from Adrian Lyne. I feel like Adrian Lyne, it goes either way. I don't know how. Broadcast News from James L. Brooks. And then we have that year's winner, which is The Last Emperor by Bernardo Bertolucci, right?
What would your pick of those be?
For that, I'd have to go either Fatal Attraction or Moonstruck, tell you the truth. I don't think this is a terrible year in terms of what was nominated and what ended up winning. Well, hold on. Well, I don't know. Ended up winning. It's Bertolucci. He's great. I'm never going to watch The Last Emperor. You know that. I don't have enough Saturdays with my mom in the world to watch that one. Fatal Attraction, I mean, obviously a classic. Talk about one of my mom's favorite. I feel like it's a mom favorite.
Really?
I don't know. Come on. You think Evelyn's not loving Fatal Attraction?
I don't know if Michelle is a big...
Moonstruck is great. Great performances all around. Obviously Cher won Best Actress that year for that.
Her and Nicolas Cage together, it's electric. It's hot, hot heat.
Kind of, but at that point, I think, I don't know.
It's like between that and Mask. Like that era of Cher to me is my favorite era of Cher. I don't go bell bottoms. I go gray streak and long jacket.
Gray streak and long jacket. All right, great. Yeah, I mean, she won Best Actress that year. Olympia Dukakis won Best Supporting for, you know.
Oh, she just passed away.
She just passed away. R.I.P. The lovely Olympia Dukakis.
Who's someone I worked with on a film actually hit me up recently, and he just directed a documentary
on about her.
Yeah, it's called Olympia, and it's available, I think, on Prime. I'll plug that.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Broadcast News is pretty cool. James L. Brooks workplace romance comedy, dramedy. It's like I don't know how much more he could fit into into that one. With, Albert Brooks, who you know I'm not a huge fan of.
And I love.
But, Holly Hunter is just great. And, how I feel about William Hurt.
Every year, he's just knocking him out the park.
Every episode, right?
Yeah.
I
mean, there's only been three, but I mean, he really knocks it out the park every year. He just knew what the people needed.
Give him a little hurt and they'll love you more. That's what, no, I don't, yeah, you gotta lay that, that's even better. Lay the hurt on him. Jesus Christ. The whole thing is just us being William Hurt advocates. Just advocating.
I didn't even realize I was such a William Hurt fan until we started doing this.
Those five are, their choices.
And not bad ones.
That's a pretty strong lineup. Out of those five, I'm gonna have to go Fatal Attraction, Moonstruck. Probably Moonstruck having the edge because it's just, I think it's just a sweet, it ends up, it's just a sweet film. And
I go Moonstruck too. I think it's one of my favorite just pure romantic comedies.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Absolutely. Three out of these five, I think, have stood the test of time. I'm sure for some people, The Last Emperor does. I'm sure for a very specific British subsect, Hope and Glory has too. But there were things that came out this year, 1987, that have had cultural impact, and if not, are kind of underrated, just gems.
I think a lot of underrated.
A lot of underrated. So we're gonna talk about him. Radio Days from Woody, kind of a, you know, one of his more low-key efforts.
Bit of a snoozer, if you ask me.
A little bit on the snoozy side, but still has its charms, you know.
Seth
He's
Green, pretty impressive though, as a
Seth
young
Green,
Woody.
little child baby Seth Green. Anyway, Radio Days by Woody Allen. Then we got Mannequin, which I saw with an ex-girlfriend at a 12 o'clock showing at the IFC on a Saturday night, and was a blast because I'd never seen it, and it's a good time.
That's so random.
It's fun. What?
Okay, like the Mannequin Mall movie where she comes to life.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good time. The dude from Designing Women's in it, he's all flamboyant and amazing. He's so good in that. Kim Cattrall, I guess, right? Yeah, it's a good time. Anyway, we got Over the Top, Sylvester Stallone, arm wrestling movie.
One of my favorite, Charlotte and I's, one of our favorite cover arts of all time.
Oh, just absolutely stunning. Just a
Beautiful.
great one. Raising Arizona from the Coen brothers, starring Nicolas Cage and Holly Hunter, and
John Goodman.
probably one of my favorite actors ever, John Goodman. And who's the other dude in it? Who's the
William
other?
Forsythe.
William Forsythe, who's always unnerving.
Oh,
Always unnerving. And he's always great. And
I love William Forsythe. Yeah.
we will talk about him more when we get to the year in which we will, you know, splooge for 45 minutes about Dick Tracy.
Oh, I thought you were gonna. Oh, okay. I thought you were going Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. What's next?
Yeah, I was gonna get right to it. We got Swimming to Cambodia, your boy
Oh,
Spalding Gray.
hell yeah.
You know, one of his "I'm gonna sit at a table and talk at you" bangers, monologue film. I like this one. I like,
Nobody did it better.
yeah, I think
In
nobody's
fact,
done it because if anybody else has done it, really. The Gate,
with Stephen Dorff.
the little baby Stephen Dorff, man, a good fun one. That's one that I just kind of, I think I,
It's a great
excuse
one
me.
for kids too, like a great starter horror movie
It's
too,
a
because
great starter horror film, yeah. And
the
I think
whole.
it's always good to see kids. It's always good to show kids kind of horror films that are, again, not too intense, but starring kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, this shit can happen to you.
Well, just the concept of the movie too is like there's like a hole in his
There's a hole in the
backyard.
backyard, yeah.
I mean, it's like anybody who, you know, if you grew up with a backyard, like has probably imagined that, or you know, like
Yeah,
that's been part of
yeah.
your play. So
And another one, in case you and Charlotte have not seen, the poster for it is fantastic.
yeah, the logo's great too.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. What's next?
What's next is RoboCop.
Oh, nice.
RoboCop, which watching it again with Ian, I thought, why the fuck was my mom letting me watch
It's a fucking crazy
RoboCop?
movie.
It's nuts. RoboCop is nuts. La Bamba, the biopic about Ritchie Valens. Sorry, as I'm eating my grapes. Ritchie Valens biopic.
Actually, my mother loves that movie.
I can imagine that's a big. I feel like that's a big mom banger,
Yeah.
La Bamba, starring the great Lou Diamond Phillips
God damn, is
and
he good in that movie?
the fantastic Isai Morales as his brother. It's just great in that.
I was thinking about that movie earlier, actually, because I was thinking like how it's maybe one of the, you know, it definitely falls into like the standard kind of biopic
Yeah, sure.
traps, but it's also, I think it's like one of the better ones, like that, and I'm gonna say Selena, and there's a few of them that like at least like they're like emotionally poignant, and they own it too, like they're not overtly manipulative.
I feel like that maybe has to do with, and I, you know, it's shit, it sucks. It sucks that, you know, they died so young. But I think it maybe kind of has to do with the fact that they did die young and that you can kind of like fit their life story into a, you know, 90-minute or 2.5 or 2 hour, you know, 2 hour film
That makes
and not
sense.
have it seem like you're missing so much. You know,
Yeah.
you can hit the emotional beats, you can hit the professional kind of highs and lows.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, where, you know, when you get into something like
Ray,
you know,
or
Ray or Walk the Line, you know, biopics, which there's some great performances, but not very good movies.
and Walk the Line even like tried to like center on
A
one
certain
particular,
time, yeah.
but it's
And then you just feel
still,
like you're missing stuff, I feel like, you
yeah.
know?
That's why I think Sid and Nancy too, like we talked about that last time, that works.
Prime example of that. So yeah, I mean, just a you know, and I think, you know, I think there are probably tropes in biopics that have been around a long time, but La Bamba, I feel like, didn't fall into, kind of had a little bit more heart and something maybe a little more interesting going on.
And it felt vital too. It felt like they were trying to, like it was important to showcase this,
Trying
this
to really honor
talent.
him. Yeah, trying to really honor him. And yeah, exactly.
Who
And
was
you
maybe
just.
a talent that was a little bit overshadowed by some of the other people that died in that plane crash.
Exactly. Yeah. Just and again, just a story that wasn't necessarily getting put on. The Buddy Holly story had been out. That came out in the 70s, right?
Yeah, the Gary Busey one, yeah.
Coming at it from the right perspective. Also, huge props to that movie for being the impetus of my obsession. Probably the most beautiful song ever made, "Sleepwalk" by Santana and Johnny. Just
Oh, yeah.
gets played in that constantly. It's just great.
I was going to say a segue from that too would be another movie that's a biopic and it's about an artist's life that was cut super short is Prick Up Your Ears with Gary Oldman, Alfred Molina, and Vanessa Redgrave, about the playwright Joe Orton, who I'm a big fan of. He wrote Loot, Entertaining Mr. Sloan, What the Butler Saw. It centers on the relationship between he and his lover, played by Alfred Molina. Gary Oldman plays Joe Orton, and they have he was eventually murdered by Alfred Molina, who was a painter, and they lived together in London. And Alfred Molina goes bald and gets insanely jealous of Joe Orton's success and the
Damn.
attention that he pulls away from him. So yeah, another movie I think that is successful based
A
on.
successful biopic on a, you know, artist of.
Yeah, and based on your thesis that they only work, we're in the public eye for a couple of years.
I think it's very hard to do a biopic right, and I think the more kind of oblique you get with it, it's better. I'll take Last Days over
Bohemian
Bohemian
Rhapsody.
Rhapsody, you know, any day. But
With that in mind, Eminem was a genius for making his biopic early in his career.
8 Mile is a very good film.
That was a brilliant move, though. He's like, I
It's
know
and it's
this is.
smart to, well, because then you sell, yeah, I mean, you're, you know, you're you,
It's also like, I'm gonna do this before I'm uninteresting.
yeah, which was right when he did it, because he's, you know, I think, you know, I feel like his fall off was perilous and steep. So yeah, I mean, that's a good example of that. All right, next up we got The Princess Bride.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, The Princess Bride by it's Rob Reiner, right? It's just a good time. That's just one of those ones that, like, if you can't like The Princess Bride, you might as just fuck off. Jesus Christ.
Uncynical, it's unpretentious.
It's just like just a good time, man.
It's
Just have
made
fun.
with everyone in mind.
We could put The Princess Bride up in the Pantheon. Maybe not quite as it, obviously not quite as high as, but you know, you can kind of put it in one of those in the list with like The Wizard of Oz, where it's just like, dude, you know what? I'm not even mad at this. Like, you can't even, nobody can be mad at this. Nobody can be, you cannot, can't, don't be offended. Just like something I think we can all agree on is The Princess Bride. We got Death Wish 4, The Crackdown.
So I loved three so much, and then
Three's the one with the punks, right? I
that's
think
the
we already
punks
went
one.
over
It's
this.
just so ridiculous that one. Four, I don't remember the
Death
crackdown.
Wish 4, The Crackdown.
Where, what city does that take
This
place
is
in?
in LA.
Okay. God, he gets around.
His girlfriend's daughter dies from an overdose of coke, and he's like running around after the like coke dealer kid.
He has so much to be angry about.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he keeps getting his family fucked with, man. And at this point, you got to think, like, if it, listen, do your due diligence. If there are any kind of ties to Paul Kersey, aka Charles Bronson, just don't do it. Just don't do it, because you're gonna end up dead. Prince, Sign of the Times. This is a live film of a concert from the Sign of the Times
That
era.
is one of the best albums.
One of the best. I remember us banging out
Oh, yeah.
fucking Sign of the Times on vinyl in your dorm room back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
great concert film. They've been showing it all on TV lately, and it's funny that it was on this list because it was like, oh man, I've watched that a bunch recently. And it's great. It's great, as you know, it's Prince, of course it is. Next up, we got one that I'm gonna let you talk about because you have seen this. I have not. It is.
Finally, I get a word
Oh, fuck you. Here's Mr. Gore Abrams, as he's known to the masses,
ahead.
with a few words about Walker from Alex Cox.
Big year for Alex Cox because he also came out with Straight to Hell that year. Last I saw it was at the now defunct CineFamily movie theater in Los
In
Angeles.
LA. Oh, yeah. Okay.
One of two films that year released by Alex Cox, who just the previous year had done the fantastic Sid and Nancy, and he followed it up with Walker starring Ed Harris, and I think my favorite Ed Harris role, maybe Truman Show comes up there. It's sort of a bizarro historical movie, very loosely based on the story of William Walker, who was this American cat who invaded and in turn made himself president of Nicaragua, which is insane. It was scored by Joe Strummer. I think of this year 87 as sort of the year of the punk rock western because we got Walk taking into consideration, and then we had three movies that are more overtly punk rock. Yeah, punks on horses, we'll call it.
Okay.
We got Dudes by Penelope Spheeris, John Cryer in the role that was originally considered Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, big downgrade there.
Yeah, they maybe should have considered that. Nothing against John Cryer. He's fine in the movie. So it's they play two punks who from New York City who are going to LA. In tow with them is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who is great in Spheeris's. I think it's the greatest punk rock film of all time, Suburbia.
Suburbia, of course.
I don't
Later
think it gets any
Days.
better. This movie's weird. I recently watched Dudes. Penelope Spheeris' own opinion of why it didn't work, I guess financially or critically or with audiences, is that the fact that she included both metal and punk in the soundtrack,
Oh yeah, come on, man. We gotta make a choice.
which, you know, having been the person to direct The Decline of Western Civilization and Suburbia by that point, you'd think, you know, but she was also getting interested in metal because the next year she directed Decline of the Western Civilization Part Two, The
The
Metal
Metal
Years,
Years.
which is
Yeah.
great. But it's a weird movie. It's worth putting on, I think, at a bar. It's for free on YouTube. Yeah. And then the third one, of course, that I was going to mention is Border Radio, which is available on Criterion. It's directed by three people: Allison Anders, Dean Lent, and Kurt Voss. And it has Chris D from The Flesh Eaters, John Doe from X, most notably, and Dave Allen from Roots band The Blasters. And yeah, but it's interesting. All three of these movies were sort of these punk themes, punks going back to the West and sort of playing cowboys and I don't know, trying to get back to some roots that they never had to begin with. And they're all kind of good times visually, but I'd say that Border Radio is probably the most successful of the three, just because it is what it is, and it's very much like not trying to be anything else. Whereas Straight to Hell and Dudes can
They
be a
swing
little
for the
bit.
fences and come up a bit short.
Straight to Hell is kind of entertaining. It's got Courtney Love, and but
Sure.
it does have a Sly Richardson in a lead role, which is really nice.
Beverly Hills Cop 2 was an offering from Eddie, the other offering from Eddie this year, which I think is very much more culturally relevant and had staying power. Eddie Murphy Raw 1987. Kind of a one of those things that it's I feel like it's a I feel like it's the just a sterling example. Always gets brought up as one of those ones that you just couldn't make today. But with that said, I don't think they should be held against they shouldn't be put in the prism of today's standards. So while Eddie Murphy Raw is, you probably couldn't get away with half of the shit he says in it today, it's one of those ones where you're looking at it in 1987 and it's fucking hilarious, whatever. But it doesn't matter because it came out in 1987, and it's that's what we're that's what we're judging it on. So fuck off. Woody Allen, September. He had two movies come out in this year. He had Radio Days, and then he had September, which ironically enough, I think came out in November. September is incredibly interesting because one, it is a very good film, and two, it is insane that Woody Allen had two movies come out in 1987 because he shot September twice.
Three times.
No, he didn't. He shot it
Three
three
times.
times. I thought it was
He
twice.
didn't finish it the first time.
Oh, Jesus.
And he had Christopher Walken in the Sam Waterston role. They didn't finish it. The second time they did finish it with Sam Shepard in the role. And he said, I need one more shot. And though, of course, the studio wanted to release it, he had earned that by that point, they felt. And so they gave him one more, and he's on record as saying he's like, I think I could have done it with one more shot.
I think I heard that. Well, this is from IMDb. According to Mia Farrow's autobiography, Woody Allen filmed two or three versions of every scene, took all the footage into the editing suite, cut the film together, and then decided that he hated it. Then he rewrote the entire script, fired and recast virtually every major part, and refilmed the entire thing. This meant that he doubled the production costs and came in well behind schedule. He was reportedly keen to do it all a third time.
Yeah.
Insane. Despite that, September is a, I think, a lovely kind of, haunting film, kind of sad chamber piece,
I
if
think
you
one of
will.
her stronger performances too.
She's great in it. Mia
Oh
Farrow's great
man.
in it. It's a kind of a lovely, I mean, it's a sad film, but it's, kind of
Oh, it's a bummer.
beautiful in a way that, sometimes the saddest films are. Very, of course we're gonna say, of course it's Bergman-esque. All right, that wraps up our big list of things that came out in 1987, alternatives to the Oscar-nominated films. There were, yeah, we both have like number sixes, that I think we hold in very high regard. So we've decided to put them in, kind of slot them in here.
Sure.
My number six is Louis Malle. Louis Malle, I don't fucking
So it
know.
was Louis Malle.
Sure, yeah, go to French
Yeah,
guy. Yeah, that's just, it's too much. You end up slobbering by the time you finish. His film, it was nominated. So but we talked about, I guess we, I don't know if we're gonna cut it or not, but we talked about Babette's Feast. AKA, we kind of didn't, but that ended up winning Best Foreign Feature that
yeah.
year. Because we kind of got it, we kind of go by Oscar nominations and wins. But Babette's Feast won Best Picture, Best Foreign Film that year. My choice, and just having watched it the other day as research for this, just an incredibly, incredibly beautiful and haunting kind of film. I was weeping at the end like a baby. But that's from Louis Malle, and it's Au Revoir, les enfants. That was just a beautiful, beautiful film. I don't know, I think it might be on Jake's top five.
Yeah, it was fighting between five and six. So I'll throw it at my six too, just so that,
Oh yeah, it could just be there.
yeah.
But just a beautiful, beautiful film. Kids growing up, kids going to, boarding school in France in during the World War II. What I guess it turns out to be kind of towards the end of it.
43.
What's that?
It was
43?
43, so
Yeah.
France was very much still occupied.
Yeah, very much very much under German occupation. And the head priest of the school decides to take in, is it like four or five Jewish children and hide them and have them, be in the school. And I just thought it was a beautiful, beautiful film.
How refreshing
Very
was it
sad at the end.
that priest was such a fucking hero?
The hero, I mean, the hero of the whole thing. Yeah, the hero of the whole thing.
Amazing.
And I think by the time you get to the end, and spoiler alert, but they end up coming and catching the kids and taking the head priest, to Auschwitz, I believe is what it says in the end. But it's one of those things where it's just like the heroism of that priest ends up rubbing off on the main character, who in reality is kind of a little shit. And it turns out, you know, it's based on Louis Malle, but based on that character is based on him.
Well, he just doesn't know any better. He's just
he just
seeing
doesn't know
all
any
this for
better.
the
He's
first
just a
time.
kid of, you know, a kid of privilege, and
Yeah.
you know, just again, he's just a kind of a
His
liberal
parents are
shit.
kind of spacey too,
The parents are
and
kind of, the mother's
bourgeois.
definitely kind of spacey. The father's never around. They're, you know, he
But
just
I
doesn't
think that
know
he's
any
a pretty
better.
sensitive kid though. Like he
He
immediately
is.
kind of
He
shines
is.
to, he's
Well,
very interested in.
they noted. It's noted throughout the film that he is one of the smartest kids in the school, and they have high hopes for him. And it's funny because they. It's funny because he mentions throughout the film, the kid mentions throughout the film that he wants to be a priest. He wants to be a priest, and everybody's kind of, it's funny because everybody's kind of trying to divert him from that
You're better than
idea
that.
because you're better than that, you're smarter than that,
Even
you
the
could,
priest.
you yeah, even the priest. And yeah, he says, I don't see this for you. I don't see this, you know, in your future. And I think, and you know, it turns out to be true. But at the end of it all, you know, when the Germans are running around trying to catch this kid who, you know, he's one, the one kid that they haven't found yet, you know, he does pull up with some courage. And it's a very thing, it's a thing that's done very subtly. It does, I mean, it doesn't end up mattering because they catch the kid anyway, but the sheer like humanity, and the decency, that priest shows rubs off and ends up coming, you know, ends up rubbing off on that kid, and you know, he tries, you know, which is, you know, I think the most important part. Just a beautiful movie, just a beautiful movie. Beautifully done, great performances, shot beautifully, kind of great sense of location and time and what it was like, the propaganda that was, you know, that was getting spewed, and just all around beautiful film that I think, you know, deserves, you know, I've always heard of it, and I finally got around to it, and it was just, you know, a wonderful time, worthy of all the praise, if anything, maybe a little more,
Yeah, I would
to
agree
be
with
honest.
that. I avoided that movie for a long time just because I kind of chalked it up to, I was like, that must be about priests and boys and shit. But
Same, yeah.
and as somebody who I went to Catholic school for a long time, I know you did as well.
Oh yeah.
And just coming up in a time when all that stuff has been like widely exposed about priests and sort of
And even
that.
more every day, and even
Yep.
more every
And that
day.
informing a lot of my already negative feelings towards the church.
Sure.
It was really refreshing to just see like a very human story and just this man who is of the cloth just be like such a in intellectual and sensitive and really like Christian in like all the ways that they're supposed to be.
Exactly.
Yeah, so great movie.
Yeah, great movie. Very glad to have sat down for that one. That was a very, you know, emotionally, you know, kind of put you through the ringer, but especially towards the end, but just, you know, you feel all that much better for having watched it.
It's true, you do feel like a better person.
You do feel like a better, I mean, you know, you know you're not, but
No,
you
you're a
feel
piece of
better.
shit.
No, of course, of course.
Always.
Yeah, always, always.
Oh, I
The
wasn't
sense.
referring to you.
No, I was
Okay.
to myself.
I'm talking about me.
No, I was
Or
referring
just,
to myself
hu
too. But
human nature.
no, like we're, as we were saying, watching Au Revoir les enfants, you know, even though you aren't, you feel like a better person, you know, after having watched it. But the truth of the matter is that you're always a piece of shit. And nothing exemplifies this more than my number five, Barfly by Barbet Schroeder.
Oh
Talk about a piece
man.
of shit. It's surrounded by nothing but pieces of shit.
Oh yeah. Was that no. Was his was w there was a documentary that was about Bukowski. Did that
Yeah, that
film
Barbet Schroeder did in yeah, that Barbet Schroeder had done a few years before.
just was
And
it before?
that's why I believe it was before, and
Oh.
that's why he even allowed him to do Barfly. It's Bukowski's only screenplay credit. There have been adaptations of his book since. I know there's one with Matt Dillon, but I
Factotum.
cannot. Factotum,
It's
yeah.
good. I liked it.
I remember watching. Yeah, it was like fine. It's fine. I think Barfly hits a little better.
Yeah, it does.
Mickey Rourke is unmatched in this, as he is. I would say throughout the entirety of the 80s, his Bukowski impersonation is hilarious and spot on, and just works great. Apparently, Bukowski was not a fan of it, but as they filmed more and more, by the end, he was a big fan, which I find funny.
Because he was getting drunker and drunker.
Probably. Faye Dunaway's in this. She's great as, you
You
know, the
know, one of my
counterpart,
favorites.
the counterpart to his, you know, drunk ass self. Mickey Rourke insisted that Frank Stallone be in this. That's why he's in it.
So psyched.
And it is also kind of, I think, you know, you can attribute it to the genius of Mickey Rourke, because Frank Stallone is perfect in this movie as just like the douchiest guy who, you know, you kind of want to kick his ass because he's, you know, that guy. Just a depressing movie. Just a depressing movie that is
Slow crawl towards death.
slow crawl towards death. You know, he gets his chance to, you know, get published for his, you know, short stories he's been sending for quite some time, and he gets money from it. And you know, in I think a fashion that is closer to real life than most movies do kind of dare to kind of get near, he
Accurate.
decides to stay being a shit. I don't know. So you're not gonna pull him from the bar. I'm gonna take this money from these short stories, and I'm gonna keep fucking drinking with my lady. Which, yeah, I mean, I think you know, not to get too deep into our shit, but you know, we've all been there in one way or another.
What do
Obviously,
you mean?
not to this extreme, but but yeah, I think just a great movie. Great sense, another one was just a great sense of time and place in terms of just, you know, our favorite. This is, you gotta be like, I'm trying to like tread lightly with this one, where it's just like our favorite place.
Bar.
The bar, and like the dregs, the shittiest bar, like just the
Oh God, I miss it.
oh man.
I've been to
This,
one bar, I
yeah.
guess, this year, and that was with you.
Oh yeah.
It
Oh my
was
God,
during
yeah.
confinement,
Yeah, during,
and
don't call it that.
it was a speakeasy.
And
What do
it
you call it?
wasn't,
Do you call it quarantine in the States?
yeah, not fucking
I'm
confinement.
just
That's
used to saying confinement.
far more, I feel like, medieval.
Yeah, everybody says confinement here.
Oh, goddamn. Well, no, it just, and that was not a speakeasy. That was a shitty comedy bar that was, you know, closed for the night, and a buddy of ours got us in, you know, because he lives with one of the bartenders, but
That
that was
sounds like a
not.
speakeasy.
No.
What you just
Speakeasies have
described.
a sense of time and place. Dude,
Have a
that dude was
piano
cooking.
player?
That dude was doing fucking peppers and sausage in a crock pot.
That sounds pretty speakeasy, man. What do you
No, it
want? You
sounds.
want fucking Cole Porter on a goddamn Steinway? My number five, I'm going to go with Pedro Almodóvar's Law of Desire.
Sure.
In a year where there's even Fatal Attraction, I'm going to say this is the horniest movie of the year.
Oh God, we haven't even tapped into any horn. Yeah, go for it.
Antonio Banderas
Oh God, one of the world's
hangs Don.
like the legend that he is.
The year before, he was in Matador, and kind of a still a big role, but it didn't really show off his prowess. In this one, he's fucking creepy. He's
Well, he's not sure, he's
obsessive.
showing off more than his prowess. I'll
Oh my
tell
God, he's
you
so good in this movie. You really like it's like A Star Is Born watching this guy in this movie. It's like, wow,
Oh, well.
he's you can just tell he's just a fucking movie star.
Yeah.
He's just a full-blown movie star. He's great in the movie. Carmen Mara, who's in a bunch of Almodóvar's films, is so good too. Esbio Poncela,
Okay.
I don't know.
Going for it.
I'm going for it. He's so good in this movie. He plays it's about a film director. I think I've heard this is kind of loosely based on Almodovar, or that's just the character is. And he's got this young lover who goes away, and it's sort of not a very fulfilling relationship. In walks Antonio Banderas, who's never had a relationship with a man and wants this guy to teach him everything. But then he gets obsessed with him and obsessed with just like having everything that he has. And it's really like a very horny tale of obsession and love. And it's still weirdly romantic in parts, and just a great movie and such a good time. And it couldn't be made by anybody else.
Yeah, it's like him, you know, Wes Anderson, you know, just kind of goes where you go, oh, you can see a frame and go, oh, yeah, that's him.
But they're always a fucking great time. They're never a drag.
Oh, yeah.
Never a drag. They're always just so much fun. And he does the Hitchcock thing of always like keeping you on your toes and like switching it up. But he does it in such a sexier, more stylish, you know, I guess.
See, I'll take Almodovar over De Palma 12 times out of 10.
I absolutely would too. And I like De Palma.
If you're going to do a Hitchcock, which again, I don't know if I've ever said, you know, I'm not a Hitchcock guy, but I think he's taken that formula and, you know, really made stunning, you know, stunning work from it. Number four on my list comes from David Mamet, and that would be House of Games. First thing that he ever directed. House of Games is I don't know. It's a thriller about grifters and about gamblers and about tricksters. It's something I'm always interested in seeing how it's done on film.
And he really illustrates it for you.
It's like, you know, he shows you how the sausage is made, but the entire thing is a grift. Joe Mantegna is just really, you know, pulling the wool over Lindsay Krause's eyes. This film also stars Ricky Jay, who is a magician, sleight of hand artist, or was, you know, he just died a couple years ago. And it's just, you can tell if you know anything about any of this stuff, it's like he's the architect of all of this stuff. You know, he wrote books about magic, about sleight of hand, about the history of magicians. I'm a huge fan of magic and magicians and sleight of hand and kind of craftiness. So he's kind of like he's kind of like the godhead of all that. And this movie's kind of like made in his image. Just a great movie. Just one of those ones that, I don't know. I feel like we could, you know, we're going to end up talking about this more down the line, but it's just one of those things it doesn't get made anymore.
No.
Mid-budget. I mean, this thing, you know, it's all shot in Chicago. I mean, I don't know how much it must have cost nothing to make. And it's not a thing, you know, there are a few set pieces in terms of things that, you know, the grifts and things like that.
Okay. It's simple and beautiful and specific. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Blood Simple in that way. It's so composed, but it's also, it makes total sense for this movie to be so composed. I actually found myself, there is a certain rhythm to the dialogue I was noticing that I'm like, oh, this could feel like a play, like the way that people specifically speak over each other. And
it's very much a thing where, you know, somebody could recreate this movie on an iPhone for, you know, less than $10,000. You know what I mean? But it doesn't take away from that's not meant as a slight. It's meant as a, you know, it's how effective the fucking thing is. You know, you could do a high school production of House of Games, you know, and have it be effective if you really put the work in.
And they're all performing for one another as well. They're all looking to make each other, you know, they're all looking for a tell.
So yeah, House of Games, just a, you know, banger from Mamet, just I think a very incredibly effective film, simplistic in its complexity. Your number four.
My number four, I'm going to go with Robert Townsend's Hollywood Shuffle.
Nice.
Which I had seen a couple of times as a kid. And then I saw it also, Cinefamily in Los Angeles with Robert Townsend introducing it and doing awesome. A question and answer after, which this is just such a, I don't know that it's underrated.
It's getting some more shine as of late. I know it was on the Criterion Channel. I think it still is.
Oh, was it?
I believe so.
Was
yeah.
on Criterion. Oh, nice.
I believe so. Yeah.
I mean, it's got like some of the best, you know, comic minds of that time. It's Keenan Ivory Wayans, I think, in a pretty early role.
Yep.
John Witherspoon, Paul Mooney in a hilarious interview segment.
God, Paul Mooney, yes.
RIP, just passed away pretty recently. Yeah. It's just a balls of the wall funny. You know, that he made this movie. Robert Townsend was a working actor, struggling, but he was a working actor. And whenever he did a film or a TV show, he would ask for the ends of reels. Like, he would just ask for extra film. And that's how he made this movie, was just with literally, which is used film.
So
and just so divisive. And he really made a great, I think one of the great Hollywood satires. I always like to think that Bowfinger later on is sort of
a great homage to this. Yeah, sure.
It's about a black actor in Hollywood who's trying to crack it, who's trying to get in. He's just sort of, when he's not being told no, he's, you know, shove him into some kind of offensive stereotype. Firstly, it's a great movie just about the struggle of being an actor and of, you know, finding your path and your way. But then
very spot on in that respect.
I just think it was super ballsy that he made the movie and that he got it released. And he went on to have a really interesting directorial career. He also, we didn't mention this, he directed Eddie Murphy's Raw that same year.
So, exactly. There you go. Because
I'm going to call him for me.
And he's still directing. I mean, he's directed a bunch of episodes of The Last OG and like, you know, like all kinds of, like I mean, Robert Townsend is great.
Townsend fucking Meteor Man, BAPS, Carmen, the hip hop.
Yeah, Carmen. Carmen's so sick.
I'm going to call him MVP of the year for Raw and Hollywood Raw.
That's pretty tight.
Goddamn good.
That's pretty tight.
You know, it is a vignette movie though. I mean, but there is a central character, and you know, you do go on this journey with him, and it's a very specific perspective, and that the writer, actor, director of the film was, you know, going through in real time. So So that's my number four.
And my number three comes from to us a beloved director. And if I'm going to have to pick one, I would say it's probably my favorite of his films, kind of more than anything, I guess. It's culturally, it's held up pretty fucking strong in the culture. And that is Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys.
Fuck yeah.
That's
your favorite one, huh?
I think so.
Yeah, that's good.
It's so good. It's so... I hate to use, I sound like Z-Way, but it's so iconic in so many ways.
Things get so much style.
To me, it's one of those ones that I'm not going to sit here and argue with anybody about. I'm not going to fucking listen to your opinion if you want to call it, you know, camp, you know, if you want to disparage it by calling it camp, or if you want to, whatever. I don't care. I don't give a shit. I'm going to sit here and just enjoy it. I have many times. If it's on TV, I'll fucking watch it. To this day, I have a pack of, you know, I got Oreos in the fridge because of grandpa, because I was like, that sounds crazy. And then I put Oreos in the fridge. I still do because it's fucking delicious. Mm. Iconic work from everybody. Kiefer, Jason Patrick, you know, the Coreys, goddamn Diane Wiest, the Queen, you know, I Still Believe, a fantastic song. You know, you're cutting from one, you know, kind of legendary scene to the next, and the pier to the, you know, the dog, you know, coming after Michael, you know, because he knows he's a vampire. And it's just great. You know, you could cut it with a knife. Edward Herman?
Or with a steak.
Those. Steak is wood. What could you cut with a steak? You can cut anything with it.
You can pierce the heart.
Enough.
Three. Okay. Three. I'm also going with the nostalgia pick.
Go for it.
A movie very dear to my heart. Evil Dead 2.
Nice.
Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, also known
as. Is Evil Dead 2 the hypothetical in High Fidelity?
Yeah, it's the...
What does it mean if I told you I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet?
I'd call you a liar.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it is Evil Dead 2.
It's so funny and violent, and the soundtrack kicks fucking ass, which actually is interesting, and we don't need to include any of this, but in High Fidelity, which I'm assuming that movie is taking place in 1999.
When
it came out. Evil Dead 2 is from 87, so are they going to a retrospective theater to watch the movie?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
Because I also know that those characters have
because
only known
it's
each other
all because we saw it together. Da, 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 da. Yeah. No, but yeah, they're definitely going to see it in like, you know, that's definitely like in Chicago. Come on. That's like a midnight
Yeah,
show
but they're talking
thing.
About it as though it's the first time they've seen it. Haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet. So
no,
that makes
no,
me think
you,
that
you're
they're
for,
seeing it
no,
for the
you're
first
no,
time.
you're forgetting the whole thing because he's talking about he's referencing her talking about sleeping with Ray.
Yes, of course. I know.
Yeah,
I
but
remember.
That's a, but he's so it's a hypothetical. It doesn't. What are you talking
He
about?
said, "What if
Where
I
is
haven't
it?"
seen Evil Dead 2 yet?"
Yeah,
And
he
then
said,
he said, "I call
what
you
if
a
somebody
liar."
told you? Yeah, what if, I know. Yeah, because
And
who
they've
else
only
is
known each
saying?
other for a couple of years.
They have well, yeah, but that but you know they go do shit after work. They and they're going to see Retrospective.
I know, but I would think that all of them have seen Evil Dead 2 in the
Well, I know, but he said
13
he's.
years that it's been available
No, he
prior.
knows. Yes, they all had seen it by that time, but they went to go see it again in the retro. This is ridiculous. Why were you?
Right. But the word, yet,
yet.
Much in the same way that I spoke about Law of Desire and Antonio Banderas, just sort of emoting star power. I feel the same way in a on a on a in a different way about Bruce Campbell.
Oh God, here you guys go. I get so sick of people with the Bruce Campbell bullshit. It's like, dude, he's good
he
in
was
the movies
born
that
to
he's
play
in, I guess.
this
Yeah,
character
like
though.
that's what you are, and like whatever. I don't want to necessarily see Bruce Campbell in anything ever again. I'm like over it because you because people have oh Evil Dead to Bruce Campbell. He should be the biggest. He should be in everything. Bruce Campbell should be fucking you know I don't know fucking in, you know, the new Snake Plissken or whatever. Like fuck you, dude. Like whatever. He's fine in those movies, and that's enough. Like Jesus Christ. Not that you're that guy, but it's just like I get sick of Bruce Campbell. Like he should be the goddamn, like he should be Kurt Russell. Not the same.
Excuse me. I said in a different way. And I don't think that Bruce Campbell should be the new Kurt Russell or Antonio Banderas.
Well, he's not now. He's like 80, so whatever. We're at number two. So for number two, I got Stanley Kubrick, Full Metal Jacket.
That's a war movie, right?
It's a little intense, to say the least. yes, that is a war film. And I believe it was Steven Spielberg who said every war film, right? What is, every war
an
film
anti-war
is
film.
An anti-war film, yeah. I would dare to say that this one is I don't think that's true. I don't think that's necessarily true even in films that Spielberg's make. I think he's kind of glorified, you know, war in at least in like Saving Private Ryan, and I think the things he's produced with Tom Hanks, I think they're. It's not to say that they're not in tribute to people, you know, to soldiers who have fought in war, and you know, they're obviously very interested in these. But I think they glorify a little bit, whereas I think, you know, a quote from Truffaut that.
Well,
what's the quote?
He and Coppola both just did not agree that Apocalypse Now was anti-war.
Yeah, which is, you know, kind of crazy. But so we know where these guys all kind of stand. And as much as, you know, or where they say they stand, because I don't believe Spielberg. But I will say that I think that Full Metal Jacket, I believe to be genuinely an anti-war film. And this is, I mean, Matthew Modine is, I mean, he's essentially a pacifist. He's trying to be a pacifist, you know. More so than anything, you just kind of see how ugly the entire beginning to end, I guess.
It does not romanticize war in the ways that all of those other movies do.
It certainly doesn't romanticize, you know, boot camp.
It's not sexy in this movie.
No.
At
it's
all.
Like, you know, and where Vincent D'Onofrio ends up going is, it's kind of symbolic of the entire thing. It's like, well, you know, it's either, you know, fall into this trap of, you know, this, you know, jingoistic, you know, fucking, you know, compliance, or kill yourself. And I think that, I think that in itself is a, you know, a pretty big indictment of, you know, the, I guess the military industrial complex and, you know, everything that comes along with it. And it's Kubrick, it's great performances, it's intense, it's, you know, and it's ultimately, I think, a true anti-war film. Which, you know, as somebody who, whatever, somebody who doesn't advocate for war, it's, you know, I think that's pretty important. I think, you know, kind of glorifying this stuff is, you know, it's dangerous and it's just kind of, it's just irresponsible. So I think that's why I think so highly of it, because I do consider it an anti-war film.
And although you can find this movie on any random day playing on some channel, for me, it's not a movie I can just pick up from anywhere and just watch.
No,
I need to
no.
be ready for it. It's emotionally taxing.
Yep.
I don't want to see his Leonard. Isn't that his name? D'Onofrio's character.
D'Onofrio, yeah. Yep.
I don't want to see him midway. I need to see it from the beginning. Otherwise, I'm just going to be so upset. I'm going to be upset either way, but I need to know where it's going. And that was Arlie Ermey, who was a real drill instructor. He petitioned for the role, and Kubrick thought he wasn't aggressive enough. And then he came at him again and just started improvising. And I think Kubrick said that he improvised a lot of that dialogue that he's yelling at the troops. For me, does the first half always works a lot, is a lot stronger for me. But I will say now, as I've
That's
gotten older,
I think everybody's of that opinion, yeah.
As I've gotten older, though, I've really enjoyed the second half a lot more.
It's one of those things you kind of come to with age, I'm sure. It's just, you see it for what you see it, I think, a little bit more clearly for what it is.
My number two, I'm gonna go with because I want to talk about it. Ishtar, Elaine
Yes, yes.
May's
That's the one me.
fatefully final film. She really, I think, got dragged through the ringer with this one. To me, she's made three perfect movies prior to that, two at least. A New Leaf, which I think is the best of the bunch.
Fantastic. Just wonderful film. You suggested it and pushed it real hard to me a few months ago, and I'm not a fan of Walter Matthau. I never have been, and doesn't matter. One of those ones that just fucking beats you to fucking submission with how just charming and funny and lovely it is.
The Heartbreak Kid with
Charles Grodin.
which is a hilarious movie, ridiculously unavailable. I found a bootleg copy online, a DVD that I ordered, and Mikey and Nikki, which I know we're not supposed to be talking about these movies, but it's the only Elaine May movie that will ever get mentioned. Because it was her last, so I don't mind. Mikey and Nikki with Cassavetes and John Cassavetes, Peter Falk, which is just a heartbreaking movie about friendship
Yeah, great,
and
another great
crime.
one.
And oh, so good. And such a diverse set of movies. None more diverse than Ishtar, which is probably her weirdest movie and yet her most conventional and her biggest budget. And Warren Beatty really went to bat for her to get this movie. I think he produced the film, and which he was one of the bigger producers of that era. And he always kind of went to bat for filmmakers, and he always felt like she never got, the recognition she clearly deserved and deserves. It's got Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman very much kind of playing against type. They play two singer-songwriters, kind of losers, which I think the music is actually great. It's written by Paul Williams. And I think Elaine May contributed to the music too, but
Probably.
they play sort of these two loser singer-songwriters who I think both of their wives or girlfriends leave them because, and they just end up sort of together. They want to be like a Simon and Garfunkel sort of duo. A lot of the talk around the movie when it came out was just about the budget and about how much over budget she went. And I just,
The
and I,
feuding between, well, the feuding between Dustin Hoffman and her and Warren Beatty, and just kind of, I think, that three-way struggle for, from having read the Warren Beatty autobiography or biography, or a biography about Warren Beatty, I guess the main one, Star, it seemed to be that the problem was that Warren Beatty's incredibly overbearing, Dustin Hoffman is as well, and then Elaine May is just like hands off. And just like was it seemed like she was like terrified to direct that movie and just terrified to be in the position to do
Really?
and just wouldn't make it. Like they were saying, I guess, in the biography, they were saying she's like she wouldn't make decisions,
Well, that's Beatty's
which is just
perspective,
that was the
right?
biographer's perspective.
Yeah, three very, very specific talents, I guess.
Yeah.
But
Or just very ill-suited to work together.
yeah, but you know what? The movie's really actually funny and weird and complex. And like I said, the music is good. I think that they're both really good in it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just watching this, so this thing. It was like Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman, Charles Grodin have all defended the film's quality in subsequent years, blaming its bad reputation on reports of production and budgetary problems, which
Which
had
is
been
fucking
leaked to the
stupid.
press.
Like, who gives a
Yeah.
shit how much a movie goes over the fucking
Well,
budget?
the studio had leaked that because I guess as a way to try to apply pressure, but that's just, pathetic. He disliked Beatty and was on poor terms with Hoffman as well. It's like, oh, so some vindictive studio head, shat on it. And mind you, it's like, oh, Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino, Edgar Wright, all fans of the film,
Yeah, it's a great
people who are all these
movie.
different people being like, it's not the greatest film in the world, but it's very entertaining and all this different stuff. It's just, it was a victim of one of those things where it's like a one word title and it's kind of funky and people just remember this, oh, Ishtar, I've never heard that. And then you just kind of, it's easy to insert into that kind of joke. It's an easy, like, shortcut to, oh, yeah, bad movie, disaster, Ishtar. It's like, oh.
I can think of a few examples in my lifetime when sort of like budgets or salaries have like become like public knowledge. Like I'm thinking about the cable guy. Remember when it was announced that
Waterworld.
Jim Carrey got
Yep. Yeah, because he
$20 million
got
and
a
like
bunch and
and that
yeah.
movie got shit on, and I think it's one of his best movies.
It's easily one of his
And
best.
why the fuck did we care how much the guy got paid?
Something to talk about in the tabloids.
Yeah. So Ishtar, that's my number two. And then for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's a hilarious, weird buddy comedy. And if you're looking for something like that, and but that's just a little bit, left field, I'd say go for it. What do you got to lose?
It's funny because I believe that ties into our number one in a certain way. Talk about hilarious buddy comedies. Both of our number ones. That'd be Withnail and I.
Starring the great Richard E. Grant,
Oh yeah.
which I would say is the best performance of the year, the best male performance of the year, and
It was up there, yeah, up
Paul
there.
McGann. Similar in I thought about them in terms of with Hollywood Shuffle, both two great movies about sort of the struggles of being an actor
Yeah, being an out
or
of work
being
actor.
an out of work actor. I mean, I don't know that there's a better movie or a better example of that. Gloriously debaucherous, oozes with style. I love so much the structure of the film and or its lack thereof.
Almost like what we were mentioning with A New Leaf, where you're just, at least for me, just beaten into submission with just how charming it is. And it's not, it's I'd never had anything against it. I'd never seen it and just never gotten down to it. And like I said, just kind of, from the first, if you're drawn to the kind of characters that we are and like have lived the kind of life that I guess we've lived and the experiences, it speaks to you and it speaks to you fast. You go, okay, I get what these guys are all about. So so in that way it's just one of those things where you go, no, that's the one from the year. That's the one from 87 for me because it's relatable, it's funny as all hell,
It's
and
so funny.
the relationship is just, the relationship is what it is. A couple of shitheads who, they got each other. They don't got much else.
It's so dire, though. Like, of course, like, yes, it's hard. It's tough being on the dole. It's tough being out of work. It's tough living. But they certainly don't help themselves either
No,
in their
they don't.
situation. But it's so like the dramatization of their own lives. I mean, just those opening scenes where they're just, rummaging, just looking for any kind of trace amount of alcohol to
Yeah,
consume, just to like continue
exactly.
their,
Yeah.
from getting sick, really.
Yeah.
It's just it's so funny and sad. And for some reason, the addition of the Jimi Hendrix version of All Along the Watchtower is such a strong choice. It's not something I would normally welcome in a movie, but I think because it's not the movie you would expect that from, you would expect something I don't know, less
Less that song, yeah.
like it's just very like we're in the 60s and this is just era defining. I
What
mean,
we're
I'm
going with.
so glad they didn't go with something like obvious like the Pogues or
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck it would be, but
It's a joke into itself almost. But a great, just a great film. Great film. And our number one choice of 1987.
yeah, I don't think it comes close.
No, I think like we've said, there's gonna be things in years coming up where I think we feel the same, and it's just like I mean, that's what a podcast is. A podcast is trying to talk about something, but you know, it's almost like, and we'll try to get better at doing so, but there are certain things where you go, fuck man, I don't know if I can talk about this as much as I feel how, you know, about it. You know, where for us, I think it's not always obvious, but to us, it's like, it's not even close. It's the hands down choice, you know. So we have that to look forward to. More of us, you know, bumbling around trying to.
The soliloquy that he recites at the very end. I mean, what a ballsy choice. You got Jimi Hendrix, and then you got him quoting from Hamlet at the end. What a piece of work is a man, that whole bit. And does it, I might say, rather beautifully. I mean, you do get the feeling like this is the guy that should be starring. He's the, you know, this is our Olivier.
This guy's not gonna be out of, or this guy shouldn't be out of work much longer.
No, but you kind of know he will be.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Of course. It's like it's you know, there's a lot to tie in Mickey Rourke in Barfly to with Elle and I.
Yeah, I mean,
For
his
sure.
talent aside, he's gonna get in his own way, but so is the world, though. The world's also like, and by the
Well,
time the
because
world
there's
get comes around to giving him a shot, it's gonna be too late. He's
it's gonna
gonna be
be too
like,
late, yeah. I
I'm
mean, it's one
already
of those things where
this.
it's like it what you know, because people because the world, you know, or the powers that be or whatever. The world have decided that you can't be both when it's, you know, who says that? Who's to say that, you know?
White man.
You could be a drunkard and a genius. Be celebrated in your own time.
We didn't really 86 anything,
96
but
to bunch of stuff, kind of. I don't know. It's a, most of it's going to be on the cutting room floor. It's going to be 86 itself. So that's, you know, look out for you know, the special edition.
I think
All
we were
the
pretty nice. I think we were pretty
expensive
gentle
stuff.
with 87. But they should have nominated Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
I
and
mean,
all of
I would say
one of
that
the
should have
holes
been
in
the
the other
winner.
side.
That should have been nominated and won.
It would have held up better, I think, over time, over Last Emperor for sure. For sure.
I mean, I would never expect with Nail and I or fucking Hollywood Shuffle or whatever,
Yeah, yeah.
but I think that Full Metal Jacket, like in terms of
It
like
hits
something that could
it hits
be,
all the like qualifiers for like something that you would imagine is like, oh, that's yeah, that's a Best Picture winner.
I would say that's the best picture of. I would say with Nail and I is my favorite, and I would say that Full
Yeah.
Metal Jacket is probably the best picture of that year.
I agree with that. Yeah. Well, another edition down. We will see you next week.
Later days.
So much easier when you don't even care.